Whatever your plan may be, put it out there, and let's get to work to find a solution.
Governor Bill Walker pushes for budget action in his annual State of the State address. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a grand jury wants the state ombudsman to examine the Office of Children's Services.
My aspect is if we weren't taking children that we should not be taking, we would be able to use the resources into families who really do need those resources.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the 2017 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms available at bpteachers.com. Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
In his annual State of the State address last evening, Governor Bill Walker pushed a lot of the same ideas and proposals for solving the state's budget crisis as last year. Walker said the state government risks spending all of its savings if it denies there's a problem and hopes for oil prices to rise.
Here's the hard truth. Denial doesn't make the problem go away. Hope doesn't pay the bills. We need to pass a plan to stabilize our fiscal future, and we need to do it now.
The gap between state spending and the money it brings in from oil, as well as other taxes and fees, is roughly $3 billion. Walker renewed his call for a series of measures he proposed last year. They include drawing money for the budget from permanent fund earnings. Walker also wants to introduce an income tax. Walker says relying heavily on spending cuts would hurt the state's economy.
Whatever your plan may be, put it out there, and let's get to work to find a solution. But if your plan does not close the fiscal gap, be sure to also identify the amount from our dwindling savings it'll take each year to cover the gap under your plan.
Walker says the State Board of Education is taking a series of steps to improve schools, and he called for more efforts to reduce deaths from heroin and prescription opioids by limiting the number of opioids in prescriptions and strengthening a database used to track opioids. Walker says the state government will seek to involve every sector of the state to address climate change.
It is one of the greatest challenges of our era. We look forward to working with you to create a legacy of timely response.
Walker's speech touched on other topics. He called for oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and he says he'll continue efforts to build a natural gas pipeline. Lawmakers from both houses say they'll offer more details on their budget plans in the coming weeks. The State Gas Line Corporation has opened a satellite office in Tokyo. State officials and the Gas Line, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, have been working to market the state's natural gas reserves to Asian markets. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney reports.
Masatoshi Nick Shiratori confirmed by phone late Wednesday evening that he's running the new office in Japan. Shiratori previously worked at Mitsubishi subsidiary Diamond Gas Shipping before he joined the state's Gas Line team. A spokesperson for the corporation confirmed this morning that the office is open, but they've not yet announced it publicly. Alaska's Gas Line Corporation is tasked with managing the massive Alaska LNG project that's expected to cost $45 to $65 billion to build. It's still negotiating with ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips to take over the project. In its current form, the LNG project would include an 800-mile pipeline to bring natural gas from the North Slope to Cook Inlet. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
The state ombudsman and a citizen review panel will address issues at the Office of Children's Services, or OCS. Alaska Assistant Attorney General Robert Henderson says the action announced today was the recommendation of a confidential grand jury investigation.
The grand jury has two functions under Alaska law. The first function is to review all criminal charges that will ultimately be filed. The second is an investigatory grand jury. And the investigative grand jury is to investigate matters of public welfare. That's where this case falls.
The grand jury investigation of OCS was requested by State Representative Tammy Wilson of North Pole. Wilson has been pressing the agency about its handling of endangered child cases, citing a 30% increase in the number of kids removed from parents in recent years and constituents unhappy with how the system has treated them. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Representative Tammy Wilson wants the Office of Children's Services to refocus on parental treatment and assistance instead of removing endangered kids from homes. Wilson has resubmitted a bill that would adopt a uniform standard for when and how children can be removed based on federal law.
And that would be the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Wilson says the federal ICWA standard, which currently only applies to Alaska Native and American Indian children, is a better formula for addressing parental behavior and keeping kids home or with extended family.
It also doesn't allow as much hearsay as it does now. You actually have to have proof that something is happening within the family unit. And it also encourages more of keeping the child in the home and putting the resources there, working with the parents versus taking the children out.
ICWA is largely known as the gold standard when it comes to best practices.
Alaska OCS Director Christy Lawton says the department is officially neutral on Wilson's bill, but acknowledges that ICWA policy mandates beneficial services.
We have to demonstrate that we have provided active efforts to prevent removal or active efforts to promote reunification.
That means actually taking family members to substance abuse treatment, counseling, or other help, not just recommending they get it. Lawton says it would be great to do that for all families, but notes ICWA was established to address systematic racism.
It's almost as if you're saying that ICWA really isn't needed anymore because the playing field is level, which unfortunately is still not the case in Alaska or in many other parts of the country.
Lawton also points to potential loss of federal support for cases involving Alaska Native families, funds contingent on meeting strict ICWA requirements the financially strapped state may struggle to achieve if applied to all child welfare cases. Representative Wilson maintains the state has enough money and just needs to do a better job.
My aspect is if we weren't taking children that we should not be taking, we would be able to use the resources into families who really do need those resources, because it's much cheaper and then better for the family to be able to keep the children in the home. And then if you need the parents to do certain types of classes, then you have those worked out at the same time.
Wilson's take is based on case records obtained through constituents critical of OCS practices. She's holding three public hearings on the agency over the next week. OCS Director Lawton says she'll continue to work with Wilson to improve agency practices. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Congressman Young's bird's eye view for tomorrow's inauguration of Donald Trump.
And I'll be up there right next to the president, or right behind him as he gives his speech.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Alaska Governor Bill Walker plans to attend Friday's inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. Walker is a Republican turned independent who did not publicly endorse a candidate for president. Walker spokeswoman Katie Marquette says it is customary for governors to be invited to presidential inaugurations. Walker told the Associated Press last month he was hopeful about having a good relationship with the Trump administration. He says he was pleased with things he was hearing, for example, on resource development issues, which are important to Alaska. If you plan to watch Donald Trump get sworn in tomorrow, look for Alaska Congressman Don Young on your screen. The congressman says he'll likely have a high-profile seat.
If everything works out, right, it's the way it goes on seniority. And I'll be up there right next to the president, or right behind him as he gives his speech.
Both of Alaska's senators will also attend. Young will be witnessing his 10th inauguration. Since 1973, when he took office, Young has missed just one presidential swearing-in, Ronald Reagan's second.
It's always a marvel to me that you can transfer power as large and most powerful as this country is from one to another person with a lot of civility and a positive direction. Now, some people don't say that's going to happen this time. I think it will. I think American people are better than that.
But there is some pre-transfer discord. Young's moving up a place in the seating hierarchy because the only House member more senior to him, Democrat John Conyers of Michigan, is skipping the ceremony in protest. Conyers announced he's not attending after Trump tweeted harshly about another congressman, civil rights legend John Lewis. The Washington Post reports that at least 60 Democratic House members have announced they're not going. U.S. senators take a variety of postures as they question cabinet nominees at confirmation hearings. APRN's Liz Ruskin looks at how Alaska's two senators engaged with nominees this week and found they stuck to a few time-honored tactics.
Some senators interrogate. Some toss softballs. Many grandstand. Senator Dan Sullivan used his first round of questions with EPA nominee Scott Pruitt to bolster the nominee. Sullivan took aim at a prior Democratic question about why Pruitt, as Oklahoma Attorney General, repeatedly sued the EPA.
I think he tried to equate a little bit suing the EPA, not caring for Oklahoma's children. Do you care about Oklahoma's children?
Without question. I've got a couple sitting behind me.
Democrats on the Environment Committee worked to portray Pruitt as Big Oil's puppet. Sullivan pointed out that a lot of Oklahomans work in the oil and gas sector.
Are these people bad actors? Are they polluters? Can you describe, you talk about the good people in your written statement. Who are these people, and are you representing them when you're bringing these kind of actions? Are they evil people?
Pruitt, of course, said they weren't. Striding through a Senate hallway afterward, Sullivan says he tries to get nominees to look at Alaska issues and also raise what he calls broader concerns.
I was emphasizing what I think most Americans, most Alaskans feel about the EPA, which is over the last 8 years, it's been an agency that believes it can regulate every nook and cranny of American life.
In later rounds with Pruitt, Sullivan brought up a rule that would require a permit to hose down a fishing boat. Everyone, left and right, seems to hate the rule, but Congress has been unable to permanently kill it. One Alaska controversy Sullivan did not bring up in public, or he said in private, is EPA's so-called preemptive veto of the proposed Pebble Mine. Sullivan says there was only so much time.
You know, I had the opportunity to raise a lot of national issues and some Alaska issues.
To the nominee for Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, Sullivan emphasized national economic growth, particularly the lack of it, which he pinned on the outgoing administration.
President Obama is going to be the first president never to hit 3% GDP growth ever in a year.
That's not entirely accurate. Hoover never saw a year of GDP growth during his presidency. Sullivan asked Ross if he agrees with those who defend Obama on GDP growth. Ross says he doesn't.
I don't think we need to have the new dismal.
So you think the narrative that's very pervasive in Washington, D.C., that the new normal is here to stay, this is what we should achieve, this is what we should expect, I think it's a surrender.
Senator Lisa Murkowski generally sticks close to one particular tactic with cabinet nominees: show how Alaska is different. It was a message Interior Secretary nominee Ryan Zinke took to heart.
Alaska's different.
At the hearing for the education nominee, Murkowski sideswiped Betsy DeVos's driving passion, school choice. Murkowski says she recently met with 400 teachers from around Alaska.
And I will tell you, they are concerned about your nomination. They're concerned because they would love to have the choice that we're talking about.
Murkowski told DeVos about Alaska villages with a few dozen students and the many communities you can't drive to.
When there is no way to get to an alternative option for your child, The best parent is left relying on a public school system that they demand to be there for their kids.
Murkowski spoke for 3.5 minutes, before she let DeVos answer.
Well, thank you, Senator, for that question.
The Senate takes a break from confirmation hearings to inaugurate the new president and then gets back to them on Tuesday. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Southeast Alaska lawmakers express skepticism that the legislature should look to school funding to cut the state's budget. In fact, some lawmakers would like to see spending increase in some education areas. As part of a Coast Alaska Station series, KTOO and APRN's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
School funding makes up one of the largest pieces of the state budget. But as the legislature looks to close a more than $3 billion gap between state spending and revenue, Southeast lawmakers say school funding shouldn't be cut further. Representative Sam Keto III says the foundation formula funding that makes up the bulk of state school spending should be taken off of the table for cuts. The Juneau Democrat says, if anything, he'd like to increase funding.
I do think that right now we are not providing an adequate education in some areas of the state.
Keto says schools serving communities with large Alaska Native populations, as well as those with high poverty levels, have the highest need for funds.
That could actually end up requiring additional funding for education. That's why we do need to look at the services we're providing and then figure out how we're going to pay for those services.
Keto also says the legislature should weigh how to support the costs of building and maintaining schools. The state program to reimburse school districts for construction bonds was suspended in 2015 for 5 years.
There are definitely areas where the program could have been fixed to save the state some money, but without it being there, the state is actually increasing our deferred maintenance of schools, which means school repair costs in the future are going to be higher.
Juneau Senator Dennis Egan, a Democrat, says he wants to avoid a repeat of last summer when Governor Bill Walker vetoed school debt reimbursement.
It was a big blow to Juneau, and we had to come up with, you know, local funding. Somebody's got to pay, but it was done after municipalities that had passed their budgets.
Juneau Representative Justin Parrish is Southeast's newest lawmaker. A paraeducator, the Democrat is a member of the House Education Committee. He joined Keto and Egan in opposing school funding cuts.
I recognize that education is the largest component of our budget. However, it is arguably the most vital for the long-term viability of our state.
In higher education, the Southeast legislators want to give the University of Alaska more time to put into place its reorganization plan, aimed in part at cutting costs. Parrish says he's eager to see how the plan affects students.
I think that while an organization is trying to make cuts intelligently, it's a little unwise to impose cuts from outside.
Keto says he'd like to see the university review whether it needs all of its buildings, and he'd like to see it refocus on meeting student needs.
How can our university system generate graduates that can enter into the workforce in Alaska and be productive members of our state? And that's the perspective I think they need to be taking.
And the lawmakers say the state should look to close the roughly $6 billion gap between its pension obligations to retired teachers and other public workers and the assets it has to pay pensions. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
A man who tried to drive a snow machine from Kotzebue to Fairbanks was found dead near Selawik Hot Springs. Alaska State Troopers say searchers on Tuesday found the body of 27-year-old Travis Lackridge. Lackridge left Shungnak at about noon on Saturday. He planned to travel through Huslia and Galena on his way to Fairbanks. A rescue team from Shungnak searched the trail to Selawik Hot Springs, the midway point between Shungnak and Huslia. His snow machine was in a nearby water crossing. Troopers say it appears he broke through ice, attempting to cross, and died of hypothermia. Extreme cold delayed recovering the body.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. If you're a rural Alaska resident with an interest in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations, consider applying for a seat on a Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. Deadline is Friday, February 3rd, 2017. More at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by your Federal Subsistence Board and the U.S. Departments of the Interior and Agriculture.
Recent police reports on the Kenai Peninsula indicate aircraft are being targeted by handheld lasers. According to Kenai Police Chief David Ross, three laser incidents were reported to the Kenai Police Department in 2016. The latest was in December. Ross says all incidents are immediately turned over to the Federal Aviation Administration for further investigation. Alan Kneitzer is the Regional Public Safety Officer for FAA. He says they take this matter very seriously and investigate each report.
Lasers can distract pilots. There have been several reports of pilots being temporarily visually impaired by these lasers. And some of these exposures have resulted in operational problems, including giving up the control of the aircraft to another pilot or aborted landings or what we call go-arounds.
He says no aircraft have crashed as a result of a laser incident. The light can disorient and temporarily blind pilots. It is a federal crime to deliberately shine lasers at aircraft. If convicted, a person can face up to 5 years in prison and $250,000 in fines. Scientists recently announced they had found an Asian tapeworm species in pink salmon caught off the coast of the Kenai Peninsula. Humans can contract the tapeworm by eating raw or undercooked fish, but researchers say the risk is low. KBBI's Shayla Farzan reports.
For years, researchers have suspected the Japanese broad tapeworm was present on the Pacific coast of North America. But with improved genetic techniques, they can now be sure. In a recent study, a team of scientists identified a Japanese broad tapeworm larva in pink salmon caught in Resurrection Creek near Hope. The tapeworm larva was tiny, about 10 millimeters long, and it had burrowed deep into the fish's muscle near the spinal cord. J.D. Ferguson is a fish pathologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and one of the study co-authors. He says the Japanese species looks remarkably similar to another fish tapeworm already present in North America.
There's been growing evidence that it's been here. It's just the ability to differentiate it with the similar-looking species has now improved with molecular testing.
Japanese broad tapeworm eggs were first found in wolf feces in British Columbia back in 2008. This is the first time larvae in fish have been found in North America, but it's likely this species has been present there for many years. That's why Ferguson says the name Japanese broad tapeworm is somewhat misleading.
Pacific salmon are on both sides of the Pacific Ocean. They've evolved on those sides for thousands and thousands of years, as has their parasites, and there's really no increased risk, no need to be alarmed.
Since it was first identified in 1986, the tapeworm has been found in several salmon species, including sockeye, chum, and pinks. Tapeworm larvae in raw or undercooked fish can infect humans and other carnivores. An estimated 2,000 people have contracted the tapeworm worldwide, mostly in Northeast Asia. The risk of contracting the parasite in Alaska, either from raw fish in a restaurant or at the store, is low. Under Alaska Food Code, businesses must freeze all fish prior to serving to kill parasites. To ensure the safety of personally caught fish, Ferguson says there are simple precautions to take.
There are FDA guidelines on how to prepare your fish properly to basically avoid any risk of infection. So that would be freezing your fish in the freezer, your standard household freezer, for 1 week, or cooking it to the standard recommended cooking temperature of 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
The study appears in the February issue of Emerging Infectious Diseases. In Homer, I'm Shayla Farzan.
Would you eat salmon-flavored ice cream or use salmon oil on your dog? A Southeast-based seafood competition aims to find out. KSTK's Aaron Bolton has more.
The Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation's Symphony of Seafood competition is nothing new. It's been running for 24 years, but the products contestants enter every year are innovative.
It's a competition for new products made out of Alaska seafood. We have four categories. First two categories are sort of some of our traditional categories. the retail and food service categories.
That's Julie Decker, the foundation's executive director. There's also a Beyond the Plate category, which features products such as salmon leather tote bags and pet oils. The Beyond the Egg category is for roe products.
This year we have two products entered. One is called a Batarga. The full name is Bruce Gore Coho Salmon Batarga. It's actually a dried salmon egg that's shaved, so something you could add on top of a pasta dish or something like that. It's really, really light and flavorful.
But what has to be the most interesting entry this year is candied salmon ice cream.
It's can be pretty polarizing. Sometimes people either love it or they hate it. So we've been trying to work on a recipe with more widespread appeal.
Mark Wheeler co-owns Copa, a Juneau ice cream shop that specializes in odd flavors.
But so we want to use local ingredients, like we make a spruce tip ice cream. We've even made Devil's Club ice cream. And so, you know, salmon is an obvious choice for a local ingredient.
The sockeye salmon is smoked, candied, and folded into ice cream with a caramel ribbon. Wheeler says he's been working on perfecting his creation for a few years and added that it's been logistical issues keeping him from entering the competition.
Yeah, I think my wife was saying, oh, you know, the fish guy, I think they have a challenge shipping fish around the country. Well, try shipping ice cream from Alaska. It's not easy.
Contestants like Wheeler compete against companies large and small, but it's a 10-judge panel that'll make the final call in Seattle on January 25th. Products are judged based on packaging, presentation, and obviously taste if it's edible. Winners of each category will go on to Seafood Expo North America in Boston, where they can show off their product to the greater industry.
And we provide them with booth space, and you know, they get to show off their product, and sometimes they walk away from that event with new sales contracts in hand. So it's a pretty cool and valuable event for folks.
Decker added that the development of these products can be quite difficult, but says the value of what they're doing spreads industry-wide.
I mean, it's pushing the edge, you know, increasing value, diversifying markets. If you have always put all of your product in a certain market, and then guess what? There's a trade embargo. You are pretty out of luck. Product and market diversification is really important, you know, for the long-term haul in the seafood industry.
Winners of the competition will be announced in Juneau on February 22nd. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Shayla Farzan and Casey Marsh in Homer, and Aaron Bolton in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettisworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation. If subsistence is important to you, consider applying for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The councils provide information and recommendations to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. Deadline to apply is Friday, February 3rd. Call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov for more information. This message sponsored by your Federal Subsistence Board and the U.S. Departments of the Interior and Agriculture.
The University of Alaska Southeast is open for business to all Alaskans. 2017 is your year to finish a degree and increase your earning power with online courses in business, accounting, and management. Explore the options online at uas.alaska.edu/SOM. This message sponsored by UAS.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.